Welcome to Day Zero Update 4, March 17th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, but we still have plenty of news. Things that are coming out in the near future. One, a bit of a surprise. Others, maybe not so much. We've got some games getting some post-launch updates that sound pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to. And then, yeah, we got the final details on Saber Interactive's deal to get away from Embracer Group.
Mm-hmm.
The Unembraced, essentially.
Yep.
And
yeah.
It's a bit more interesting than you might have expected. But it's going to be pretty neat to see that. And we got some other news sprinkled in here. But before we get to that, we'll talk about what we have been playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a good bit of MLB The Show 24, the newest game in the series. Mm-hmm. Got the MVP edition that includes a few days of early access here that I've been enjoying. And yeah, some of the big things they've added this year, there's another season of storylines for the Negro League stuff. 10 players, though there is just 4 in it right now. They're going to add 2 more waves of 3 over the next couple of months here. But I played the one with Toni Stone, the first woman in professional baseball. That was a lot of fun to play. So that was pretty cool. And then from that, you unlock a Toni Stone card to use in Diamond Dynasty there, sort of ultimate team mode that is pretty cool. And along with that, making her a playable character in storylines, they allow you to use the women for Road to the Show, the career mode, which is a pretty cool thing to see as you get... I don't know if there's a change in the... There probably is, because yeah, the story when you make a woman in there is that you have... been invited to the MLB Combine, Draft Combine, along with one of your, with another woman that used to know as kids and have kind of not played together in a long time, but are kind of going through this little journey together in a really fun way. That is a really cool thing to see. And yeah, it's, and so you kind of get some story stuff there through that. That is, pretty nice that is specific to the two characters. The one that your buddy is a set character, so they say her name a couple times in that, so that is pretty cool. And yeah, they do have another so they get some actual people off of MLB Network's coverage stuff, and one of them is Sarah Langs, who if you follow sort of sports stuff on Twitter, especially baseball, she is often one that posts a lot of stats stuff, interesting stats, all that kind of stuff. And she got diagnosed with ALS a few years ago, so she has been dealing with that in her own way, but she is in this game as part of the commentary. That is pretty cool to see. Maybe the one way that you can tell how it's affecting her is that her voice is it's like a little slower to speak, because that's probably pretty straining on her to be able to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty cool to see her in this as well.
Mm.
And it's a pretty nice game. That stuff is pretty cool. You get some story stuff that goes with the being the first two women invited to the combine, and the first two that get drafted, and you kind of do some early game stuff just setting where your draft value might be, though. In the end, you can kind of just say like, hey, I want to be drafted by this team, and they'll figure it out for you. I got drafted by the Cleveland Guardians. That was mm-hmm. the team that I picked for my character. So I made a closing pitcher. So she pitches an inning or so at most mm-hmm. per game. So been having fun with that. It makes for some quicker games to go through, so
mm-hmm.
don't have to spend a ton of time there. But that's been pretty fun as well. Not really too much changed with Road to the Show. They've changed the UI a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Made it a little easier to get around, and then there's The other part of the storylines mode is that they're featuring the career of Derek Jeter, the captain, as he's known as, the play for the Yankees his entire career. I think probably the most recent player to hit 3,000 hits, reach that milestone.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets whole story thing where he's kind of narrating his own story as they're going through like key moments of a lot of that. So that kind of adds some interesting stuff that you kind of see the limits of that kind of mode, because they go through some of these teams that I know familiarly from the mid 90s, and you can see like, oh, there's like two licensed players in this when they play the Yankees play Cleveland one year. There's like two actual players on the entire team because it's the two that they have licensed for the Diamond Dynasty stuff. And it's like, that's not great, but they do like mention other players' names or actual players' names, but you don't actually get to see them or play them. But I think even on the Yankees squads, they don't have everybody in there that was on those teams. So there's some fake players as well. So yeah, kind of one of the downsides there, but much like the Negro Leagues modes, it has, I think, his first five seasons in there, and they'll add the others as we go on here over the next few months. So there'll be some more there, but I found the challenges they make you go through for getting, you know, two hits in a game or, you know, get an RBI or extra base hits. Like those are tougher in this one versus the Negro Leagues mode. So that was kind of a bit of a challenge there, but yeah, been also playing some more of the Diamond Dynasty stuff in there, and that's all kind of mostly the same. They've changed some of the collections stuff where you collect different kinds of cards and you get bonuses for having, you know, 10 players from this team, 20 from this team, you know, that kind of stuff as you try to get the full suite of players for each team. The equipment one's the one that's a bit different where you'd have like 15 categories of equipment that you can apply to your Road to the Show characters to improve stats and such. But they only have, I think, bats and socks, I think, that you can collect. It's a bit of a different thing. They do have like a lot of other stuff to collect, but the equipment, they pared down quite a bit. I don't know if that's for any particular reason or if it's just adding a lot of extra crap to keep track of. But yeah, that's kind of it about MLB The Show 24 this year. It's seems like another very good game, so I'm looking forward to put some more time into that. But yeah, that's a lot of fun. So
yep,
there's that. The other new game I got this week, LlamaSoft, The Jeff Minter Story, the newest collection from Digital Eclipse. That brings a lot of Jeff Minter's, mainly his 80s games, and a few from the early 90s. That is pretty cool to see, though the downside is that a lot of those games are fairly simple and don't necessarily have the Jeff Minter flavor that you expect out of him for what he's made over the last like 20, 30 years at this point.
Yeah.
And it's mainly just a limitation of the platforms that he's working on. I think stuff like the VIC-20, Commodore 64. Not that those couldn't do some good visuals and all that, but a lot of his early games were kind of very simple kind of games. Like one of them that you can play is called Deflect, where it just displays like a number on the screen and you have to hit buttons to lay down these panels to try to knock a ball into that. It's sort of like a column and row kind of thing. And it's just kind of like, it's kind of ultimately like a snake kind of game, but in more abstract in a way. But then you got others that are very clearly like him trying to make Defender and this other stuff. And, you know, there's Attack of the Mutant Campbells that is very much a clone of the Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back game for the Atari 2600, which is also kind of a Defender-ish kind of game, but you're kind of just shooting at these versions of the AT-AT that are turned into camels and kind of shoot them down, that kind of stuff. So a lot of the earlier stuff is a little simplistic and whatnot, but it's where you get into the later stuff where they have there's a version of Attack of the Mutant Camels for the Konix Multisystem, a console that was going to be made at one point but got canceled before it ever released, and they managed to emulate that enough to get his game working, which isn't a finished product. You just, I don't believe you can die in it. But it's kind of the same kind of setup where you're trying to defend your base from these mutant camels that are showing up. They do have like weapons attached to them because this is like an early 90s hardware kind of system. So maybe around the Super Nintendo kind of level of visuals. Mm-hmm. And that's where he starts to really get a unique art style to him. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty fun little game, but it's not, doesn't really have much to it because it's just a prototype of a game that was going to release on a system that never released. So,
yep.
But there is some other stuff like Grid. I think it's called Gridmaster. Mm-hmm. Grid Runner. That is, his take on like Centipede. Mm-hmm. Though you can move in a more, you can kind of move all over the screen in mm-hmm. most of these versions I've seen, and you also have kind of in a, maybe a Bomberman, like a Bomberman multiplayer where like the people that get knocked out kind of end up on the edges of the screen, kind of throwing stuff in. Mm-hmm. You kind of have that, but they're shooting lasers. So you're just having a lot of bullshit trying to keep you from taking out these, you know, these enemies that are invading, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff. And then you get to probably the most British game is a game called Hover Bover, where you are a man who needs to mow his lawn, but your mower is broken, so you steal mowers from your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And as you're, you know, stealing their mowers and trying to mow your lawn, they're like chasing after you, trying to get your mower back, get their mower back. And it's just a ridiculous game. There's also a dog in there as well that's running around. It's a ridiculous game that doesn't make any sense other than somebody being like, this might be a fun little thing to make. Mm-hmm. And so it's got some neat stuff there. And yeah, he's got a handful of games like that that he's kind of remade or made sequels for, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the big one that the Digital Eclipse is kind of remastered is Grid Runner in a more full form. Yeah. So it's still a version of the Commodore 64 version. They've just kind of built new visuals on top of it. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of pause it and save whenever and use rewind and all that kind of stuff. So it's probably more friendly game to get like all the achievements or trophies in. Because there's only a handful of trophies, I think, for some of the extra games in there. Like it's one for like 6 or 7, maybe 10 other games in there. And there's like 3 just for Grid Runner Remastered, which you can, you know, save and rewind to undo any mistakes you made. And it's just like all the trophies are for getting to certain stages. So that shouldn't be too hard if you want to put the time into it. But besides the games, it's the story stuff they do with Jeff Minter and other people from his, from, you know, England that know his work or people that have worked with him and know him. Mm-hmm. If you've never seen Jeff Minter, he's very much the vision of a 70s hippie.
Yep.
Just now he's old. He grew up in the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. And very much influenced by hippie culture. There's one game that he made that was called Bomb Buenos Aires. That got people mad when he advertised it, because it was a protest game against the invasion that the UK had in Buenos Aires.
Yeah, well, it was about the Falkland Islands.
Yeah,
yeah, with Argentina. Yeah,
and he made this game as like a protest kind of game and got people mad, so he had to change the name to like Bomber, just something generic.
Mm-hmm.
To it. So he has some ideals like that show up from time to time in his games, but mostly he just makes a lot of games influenced by arcade games that he liked or Atari games that he liked, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he makes like Tempest sequels, Tempest 2000 for the Atari Jaguars in here, so you can play that and experience the full breadth of his use for various fonts in a game.
Mm-hmm.
that he likes to do these days. So yeah, very fun collection, very interesting story as they talk about him like failing out of school initially, going back to a different school and that having to end early because he had some heart issues that had had him on bed rest for several months. And that's when I believe his mom got him a micro PC. Otherwise he had to either get like a ZX80, I think it was, or an 81 that are like the first like really accessible of these micro PCs that people had in the UK. It was like £100, that kind of thing. But got like might have been a ZX Spectrum that he got. So that was a thing that he made a bunch of games for. And so, yeah, he kind of learned a lot about those kind of micro PCs that were mostly in the UK that we didn't get over here. I think Commodore 64 we got over here, and maybe one or two others, but not.
What
not
about really the spec? Did we get the Spectrum? I don't think we got the Spectrum.
Maybe not.
Because that's where a whole like a lot of PC gaming over there was based around. There was a massive like homegrown Spectrum game industry over there. It's crazy. And honestly, one of the things I love about those old school British developers is their like goofy sense of humor. Because Jeff Minter is a really good example of that, but he was definitely not alone when it came to, you know, making video games over there. A lot of them had this really just cartoonish sense of humor that made their games so uniquely goofy. It's amazing, really.
Yeah. From what I can see, the ZX Spectrum did come over in 83.
Yeah.
About a year later, so.
Yeah.
But it's I think it only sold like just over 5 million units, so.
Yeah.
That's something you probably saw many people with, if ever. Yeah. But yeah, it's a good range of systems that are emulated here. Mm-hmm. And it's got a good like 40 games in it. Mm-hmm. Some ways are just like, here's this game, you know, that he made for, you know, the Spectrum, or this one for the Commodore 64, or for the Atari 8-bit computer that he worked on, and that kind of stuff. So get some repeats, but also you can see kind of the ways that those different PCs kind of affected the sort of game that he could make. So you get some cool stuff to see out of that stuff, the scenes that he was in. So yeah, that's a very cool collection. If you like the Atari 50 or the Making of Karateka collections, this is another one that's well worth checking out if you want to see some more of kind of the UK's PC history there, from one of its more eccentric developers, who making a lot of games about camels and sheep and all that. Lives on a farm, has a bunch of sheep there, sheep and llama, I think. So though he doesn't post much on Twitter these days, it might be on Blue Sky, might be on Mastodon. I forget where he's posting those these days, but you can see him sharing a lot of his farmhand stuff there. So that's a fun one to check out. The other big thing I got this week is I got a Playdate. If you remember, it's like an indie handheld platform that got announced a few years ago. I think it came out in 2022. And kind of like a lot of the indie handheld platform stuff, it kind of was stuck in limbo of, you know, there's a bunch that have people have pre-ordered it, but their ability to produce a ton of the units out there took a bit. But it wasn't until maybe about a month or so ago that they had kind of caught up, and kind of now you can just go on their site and order one. I got one with the cover, the magnetic cover that comes with it, which, you know, magnetizes to the system itself, but also allows you to, when it's in the cover, you can like attach it to magnetic objects. So like you can hang it on your fridge, or for me, my desk leg here that I have a thermometer on, so I can see like what the temperature is in here. I can put that right on there, just let it hang out, not take up any unnecessary space on this desk, that kind of thing. So it's really cool. But the system itself, it's a black and white screen, but it's a very high res one. So there's a number of the games I've been playing have really nice looking art to it. That is cool to see. So far I've had two. So when you get one, they roll out a season one of games to you that it's, I think it's every week. I don't know if it's directly on every, you know, 7 days from when you first get the first ones, but they don't really surface that too much as I would like. But I have two games initially for it right now. Whitewater Wipeout, which is a surfing game, which you use the coolest thing. It has a D-pad, B and A buttons, sort of like an original Game Boy, but it also has a crank on it on the side that can kind of tuck into the system when you don't need to use it. But you can also just kind of pull it back out. And it's pretty nice to control. And for this surfing game, you use it for controlling the direction that your surfer is surfing with the board. And so you're kind of basically just trying to go up the wave and kind of launch off and do some, you know, 360s, 720s, whatever you can fit in spinning-wise into that. It's very tough to get it. To get the hang of that one, so I haven't played too much of that. The other game you get is a game called Casual Birder in your first wave. This is more of an adventure game of sorts where you're essentially somebody who moves to this town where everybody's obsessed with bird watching. And so you kind of get this camera that you use to take pictures of these various birds, and I believe they're all fake birds, just weird birds, and you're kind of talking to people who give you jobs to like show them pictures of birds and such. And so you're kind of going around dealing with, you know, hooligans and bird watching fans and all this kind of stuff and having some fun. It's kind of a fun little quirky game. There's two free games in the shop that they call the catalog. I've not played those yet. So there's Real Steel and Recommendation Dog. I'm not sure what those are exactly, but they're in there. But the other game I bought for $6 was Mars After Midnight. This is the newest game from Lucas Pope, who's kind of the Playdate's Hideo Kojima, essentially the top developer that they've talked about for a bit, was working on a game and finally has put it out here in the last couple of weeks, Mars After Midnight. It's kind of a version of his big game Papers, Please, almost. You're on Mars, where you're living in a an off-world colony settlement, I guess, outside of the big cities. And you're running this, essentially like a community center that you get to, I think the initial topic you don't pick, but from there you get to kind of pick different topics. One I picked was net knife handling. And so as you, and you're picking like, you know, the topic, and it'll show you a map of the city, and like, here's where the people that would be interested in this thing are generally at, and you can pick like where you advertise for this stuff. And then you pick a food, and it kind of shows you what, you know, areas the food, different types of food attract or you know, geared towards, I guess. And once you set all that, you start into your session of like Papers, Please. You're kind of, if you know, like the in movies and shows and such, you have the shady door that's always shut, but you know, you knock on it and you see some eyes pop out to be like, what do you want? You know, you're kind of doing that. You're cranking the crank to lift up that door to see what they are. And these are all like weird alien designs, so it's some really cool art in that front. And the initial one was a Cyclops anger management, so it had a little note on the door like, you want to see Cyclops that are not happy, so you're looking for like a frowny face, and then reject anybody with more than one eyes. And so you're lifting it up, seeing like what they have. You use the D-pad to look around a bit, and if you're like, that's two eyes, then just close the door again. And then you'll hear a knock and somebody else has shown up, and you lift it up and you're like, all right, this one has, you know, one eye, and they don't seem to be too happy. So you hold down the A button to let them in. And then as they come in, they take a look at your little snack table that you've put down some snacks for. And if they feel like it, they'll take one. And there's a chance they'll just like fuck up everything there and just rearrange it. So you have to, between people, you kind of have a chance to quickly rearrange it back to the way it should be set up. And if they make a mess, you have to pick everything up, because you're also a weird little alien creature. You have like three eyes and a beak and tentacles. So you're picking up everything and using a crank to lift out the thing that scrapes crumbs off the table, cleans it off. And then you go back and forth looking for more people that want to show up and let the right ones in. And if you do that all right, you get some money out of it for letting them in to get the services they need. And that lets you, you know, keep going. And so like Papers, Please, you're just trying to keep going, I assume, as long as you can. I've done a few nights, so I have not seen what the ultimate goal is, though it does tell you between sessions, like, oh, there's, you know, 72 people left to help. So I assume based on it being six people, I think, every time, you probably have something like 13 or 14 nights total, including the starting one. So that's a very fun game. Definitely really fun. The only knocks I have against this system, this is a black and white screen. There's no backlight to it. So you need to very much have some good lighting on you, which my current setup in this apartment's not great for that. So like playing in the evenings, not the best time for that. And I think the only other issue is that it has like a home screen button that you can click on to like access settings or go to straight to the catalog or take a screenshot. Games will have some specific stuff they can put up there for maybe getting to different parts of the game or whatever. But it can be hard to tell, like when I was playing Mars After Midnight, like when it saves, so I know when I could quit out, kind of thing. And that seems like more of a thing that game should surface more easily. But that's maybe the other real knock, is like kind of being, having this ambiguous kind of pause button, not always being aware of what that's able to do. And the only other really issue was just kind of in general setup. It runs you through multiple firmware updates. And so I had bought Mars After Midnight before the update that allowed you, that I think allowed you to download that stuff. The non-season based games. So I was like, I bought it and I was like, it has a button to go download and it brings me to download screen and it's not, the game's not on there. And I was like, okay, well, I came back later and it was like, oh, you got an update. And I was like, updated. And it's like, oh, now that works. So it was like a little bit frustrating. It doesn't just get you to the final update, the most recent update, but I guess that's not a huge issue. But yeah, that was one little thing that was kind of confusing for a bit. But it does have a lot of cool stuff, a lot of cool little games in here, pretty cheap. Unfortunately, just had a big sale celebrating, I think, the system being out for like 2 years now. So I just missed that to get some of the stuff on sale. But they do have sales on, devs upload their Playdate games on Itch as well. So you can get, you don't really even get codes for it. Essentially, you go to the Playdate site, there's a link on there for your account where you can sideload games to it. And all you do is just download the zip file that you get from Itch or wherever, and you just upload it there, and then it'll show up in your games listing as a thing that you can download, and you download. So that's a pretty cool, kind of pretty seamless thing to do. And yeah, this thing has like an app for streaming this to the PC, or you plug it in by a USB and it mirrors it on the PC. So I could stream this, record video, you know, do all that kind of stuff. You can play with game controllers or your mouse or PC. So like some of the stuff that's listed on Itch mentions like, oh, you can just hit, you know, X and C on your keyboard to play this instead of using a controller if you don't want to, that kind of stuff. So they have some really cool software like that, that you can use to kind of share these games. That's pretty cool. And yeah, the account stuff is pretty neat. The weirdest thing is the, when I put a payment card on here, it lists my email as the name on it. And I, I'm not a fan of that. So I feel like, why not just let me put my name on there so that it doesn't look like it's been hacked. So that was the other thing when my, when I couldn't download, I was like, oh no, did I just get my card locked? Because it looks like somebody hacked it somehow. But no, that seemed to be an all right thing. But yeah, that's like a weird thing that it does. But yeah, it's really cool. Definitely recommend this for people that like indie games and want to check out a platform for people to make lots of weird little stuff on that. It's $200. You should get it within about a week. The weird thing is the shipping was saying it wouldn't get here till Monday, but it showed up on Friday. So that was all right. And the system's a bit small. It's kind of like a little bit smaller than like a pack of playing cards. At least height wise, it's a little bit wider than that. It's almost like a square system, but it's really cool. Definitely recommend it. You can get a bundle with the cover, the magnetic cover I mentioned, for $219. It's about $10 off for the cover itself. So that's a thing I recommend for people that like weird little systems that you can play. You know, there's probably like 30 or 40 games in the shop. It's obviously not going to be on the level of a Switch or anything like that, but if you want to play lots of weird little experimental games, this is a really good platform for that. So I'll probably talk more about that stuff as I get more games on this thing and be able to stream some of it and share what it does. That's pretty cool. So yeah, there's the Playdate. And then the last thing I've been playing is more Balatro. I've gotten to Anti-8 a couple of times, which is sort of the end of a successful run. But you can keep going beyond that for a good bit, where the blinds start getting aggressively high. But yeah, I've not been able to get back to Anti-8 consistently, just due to the way that they drop jokers in there and trying to find the ones that go well together. Had a couple good ones, either based on building up a lot of money to buy jokers, or building up ones based on multipliers, the times multipliers, not the plus multipliers. There's very specific versions of the multipliers that you get that can help you get higher and higher scores. But just not being able to get it over the hump there, essentially. So, but yeah, still liking that game a lot. But that's been pretty much all I've been playing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I have been playing, well, I've been playing Pacific Drive still a little bit, not a whole lot, but I am still playing that. But most of my gaming time has been taken up by Unicorn Overlord for just how enjoyable and addictive it is. The gaming loop in this game is just, it's incredibly addictive, and it's incredible just how deep and complicated this game is underneath the surface. The whole thing, like I said previously, is that the way this game works is that battle is basically, unlike in, like, you know, Fire Emblem or, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics, one of those games where it's individual units that you're doing, like, on like a time, you know, like as you know, on timing, different turns. I don't know why I kept saying timing, turn-based. This game happens mostly in real time. And because of that, you basically, your platoons, because it's not individual units, it's a bunch of units in a platoon. You have to essentially do something similar to what the Gambit system was in Final Fantasy Tactics, where you have to sort of pre-program all of the actions that they're going to take going up against the enemies that they're going to encounter. And all the platoons, like, they all operate in real time. So it wouldn't really work otherwise. So once that happens, like all these characters that you get involved with, and keep in mind, outside of like the regular named characters that you encounter, you're also, you know, you can like hire mercenaries and stuff to fill out your platoons and stuff. As they like, you know, level up their stuff, as they actually like level up, they get like new abilities and stuff that you can switch out. And on top of switching out, you can also control like the order that they will happen at. So if you have like, say, some magicians in it, magicians can do things like they can power up your attack. They can also, you know, do magic attacks as well. They can also create like magic shields. And you can basically program all that stuff in the order that you want it to happen before you let them loose. And it's incredibly addictive. Just how complex and just all the ways you can go about this. And the thing is, I'm still like, I've already like liberated like two of the major countries, the kingdoms in here. And I'm about two thirds of the way of the third one before going to the fourth major one. I'm like a two thirds of the way before going on to the next one. And I'm still getting like new classes of units and like new attacks to use for these. And on top of that, they've introduced a system called promotion where you can take the units from your army and like promote them. But yeah, it's amazing. I'm still having a great time playing this game. It's a definite like game of the year contender for me for sure. I'm like getting pretty, I've been playing this game for several hours now and I'm still not halfway through the story yet. There's so much stuff to do in this game. It's amazing. But yeah, that's Unicorn Overlord. That's basically what I've been playing.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news here. And first up, it is the second half of March. So PlayStation Plus has announced their game catalog for the rest of the month for premium and extra players. Mm-hmm. The first tier is for both extra and premium. There is NBA 2K24 for PS4 and PS5. I think this is the Kobe Bryant edition. So the top most expensive edition. I'm not 100% sure on that, but you can check that out. I believe that game is also on Game Pass as like a surprise announcement. So probably tied between the two. Two services, much like RE2 and 3, those remakes were last month, I think. So you can check that out if you want some sports gaming action on there. Also for PS4 and PS5, Marvel's Midnight Suns. So you can check out the game that was like very jarring for people playing a game from the people that made, you know, XCOM and Civ, to have Marvel's Midnight Suns not be all that much like those games, either of those games. I believe this is more of a tactical RPG, like when you probably see more on console versus what XCOM is. So you get that along with a lot of you know, slice of life stuff between missions, between the different heroes. So you get that. You can check out here. This will be on Tuesday the 19th, I believe. You can check out, yeah, Resident Evil 3 for PS4 and PS5, as I mentioned, is on here. So you can check out that one. Play that for PS4. There's Lego DC Supervillains. Another one of those good Lego games. With a lot of the focus on the DC supervillains. So play with Joker and Harley Quinn and all them. So there you go for that. Let's see, for PS5, Mystic Pillars Remastered. This is a game set in ancient India. Sort of a puzzle, probably narrative adventure game of sorts. Or no, reimagination of the Indian traditional board game Ali Guli Main. Internationally known variant Mancala. You can check that out. That looks pretty neat. Let's see here. For PS5 and PS4, Blood Bowl 3. This is an adaptation of a board game. But taking essentially like Warhammer type of characters.
Yep.
And putting them in a version of like American football.
Yep.
But yep, I believe that's... it's the game version is not like, you know, NFL Blitz or anything. I believe it's still turn-based kind of thing here. So, you know, don't expect this to be like an arcade sports game.
Mm-hmm.
It's nerdier than that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Keep in mind that American football is like exotic for them. So
yeah. But yeah, these devs have been making these games for the last like 10 years.
Oh yeah.
So, let's see, for PS4, Super Neptunia RPG.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one of the latest games from that franchise of just weird industry spoofing JRPG mm-hmm. stuff. This is a side-scrolling action RPG, so
yep,
there you go for that. This sort of series that has characters based on Nintendo, Sega,
mm-hmm.
PlayStation, maybe even Xbox as well. They're just like, here's them as like magical little girls.
Yep.
Fighting stuff, so.
It's like, why the heck not?
Yeah.
If it works, it works.
Yeah. And then for PS5, there's Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. As I say here, the PS4 version is already on PlayStation Plus mm-hmm. game catalog, so they're just adding the PS5 version in there as well for people yep. to check out. Which they just did, I assume it's going to be the final DLC, which is the end of Dragon Ball Z mm-hmm. with one last tournament and the introduction of Oob,
mm-hmm.
The reincarnated version of Boo as a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time they put a person of color in the main crew.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, we're not doing that after this. We're making Dragon Ball GT that's nonsense. And then we're making Dragon Ball Super that's set before mm-hmm. the Oob stuff. So we still haven't really gotten to that point back in any of the newer material they've made. Mm-hmm. So there you go for that. That's mm-hmm. the tier for extra and premium. The stuff that's just for premium. Mm. The classics they have for PS5, PS4, Jak and Daxter, The Lost Frontier, the PSP game
mm-hmm.
That I believe got announced on April Fool's Day that people were just super confused by if it was a real announcement or not. So that's finally coming out
mm-hmm.
on the consoles. Also for PS5, PS4, Cool Borders, the PS1 game.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be working their way through that series.
Oh, yeah.
Of snowboarding games where... I think it just gets worse with each one.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the first one's any like amazing game or anything, but I know at least 3 and 4 are not very good games, but
yeah,
we'll get them. Mm-hmm. You can see for yourself. Let's see. PS5, PS4, God's mm-hmm. Eater Burst. This is one of those PSP and Vita Monster Hunter clones when Monster Hunter got really big.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Bandai Namco series.
Mm.
So you can check that out for PS4, Phoenix Wright and Ace Attorney Trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play those original three games.
Mm.
They're all very good. Let's see. I think this is for PS4. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R.
Yep.
Remaster of a PS3 fighting game
mm-hmm.
that has added a bunch of new characters into it as well. So
yep.
If you're into JoJo, it's probably a pretty decent fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. And then they mentioned here starting April 1st, My Hero Academia Season 1 will be available on the Sony Pictures Core app
mm-hmm.
For PS Plus Premium members. So you can check that out as sort of their adding that select series from Crunchyroll to the service. So mm-hmm. Let's see. And they're adding other stuff to Crunchyroll on March 13th for a bunch of other countries, Mexico, Spain, Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Italy, and France.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's more that you can check out there. So yeah, pretty solid month. Some good stuff there to check out. Mm-hmm. I'll probably check out the Midnight Suns to see how that plays out. And probably check out the Jak and Daxter game because that's a pretty solid game there.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, some good stuff for you to check out. For things that are happening here in a little bit further off, we finally got where we got an announcement that Grandia HD Collection is coming to PS4 and Xbox One on March 26th. This is a collection that's been out on Switch and PC for a year or so now. And I believe those games are not well liked by the Grandia community because they changed the graphics.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah.
So they kind of look a little bit weirder than people would like. Luckily, if you have PS Plus Premium or if you buy it outright, the original Grandia is available on PS Plus, PS5, PS4, so you can play it that way.
Yep.
Enjoy the original game. But yeah, this is... Oh, the Switch collection came out, 5 years ago. That was longer ago. I thought it was more recent. So yeah, there's hubbub that they might be adding trophies to the PS1 version that's already on PSN. But I don't know, maybe that's just tied into the collection here. I don't know, but... So yeah, there you go. You can check out some cool games that maybe isn't treated as well as it should have been. So yeah, there you go. And then, yeah, let's see. For a little farther stuff that's farther off, System Shock, that remake that came out, I think, last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, last year on PC from Night Dive. They are bringing that to PlayStation and Xbox, PS5, PS4, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X and S. That'll be out May 21st. Yeah, those are... the first one's a little rougher than the second one.
Yeah.
But these are games that kind of very much made by some of the same people that worked on BioShock.
Yeah, BioShock is basically a spiritual successor to System Shock 2. So, yeah, a lot of the people that would go on to found Remedy got started doing these games.
Yeah. I'd say these are more darker games. Even just literally darker games, but yeah, more focused on the horror stuff than what BioShock would do for the most part. But yeah, so that's cool. Maybe they'll do System Shock 2 at some point, because I know they've done that. But yeah, you can check that out here in about 2 months. Then a week after that, Multiverses is coming back. The game that WB pulled about a year ago.
Yep.
On the basis that that was just a beta, and that they're, you know, gonna rework it and get it ready for official launch, and seems like they followed through with that. The game has been rebuilt on Unreal Engine 5, so it's supposed to be looking a good bit better, better lighting, revamped netcode to make it a more consistent online experience for all the platforms. Let's see, every existing fighter sports new attacks and combat mechanics, and there are new fighters on the way. As the game where they had like LeBron James from the new Space Jam movie, he was in like a beta form, like being real rough around that kind of stuff. But they also have new stages coming as well, a new PvE mode coming to the game. No real explicit details on that. Just saying it will offer additional ways of playing with unique rewards. So kind of neat that they are actually putting this back out, because as we know from Warner Brothers Discovery, that their record of what happens when they take things down is that it never returns. So this is at least one thing that they've seen enough value in to kind of let the team actually work on it, I guess, and make it a better thing. So that's cool to see. Yeah, that'll be back out on all the PlayStations, Xboxes, PC, and I believe... Okay, they don't mention Switch here, but maybe the new Switch whenever that gets announced. But yeah, there you go. Something, a little bit of surprise here.
Yep.
And then, yeah, we got another announcement here that Summer Game Fest is indeed returning. June 7th will be when the main showcase happens. That'll be 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. I believe right after that, they're going to do Day of the Devs as well. Who Day of the Devs just recently went independent of Double Fine. So they are on their own financially, not being tied directly to, you know, Double Fine and Microsoft at this point. So that's cool. They'll be doing their big online live stream, mm-hmm. showing off a bunch of new indie games there. We'll have to wait to see if any other publishers and platform holders are going to have streams as well during that time frame, but I assume they will. So yes, yeah, the start of everybody having to pay attention to what the stream schedule is for this year. Yeah, I'm looking at their sites. Nothing really here just yet. Just big thing says June 7th. So I'm sure we'll get some more announcements on that front here over the next month or two. But yes, let's see. Also happening in June, Monster Hunter Stories and Monster Hunter Stories 2 Wings of Ruin are launching on new platforms on June 14th.
Mm-hmm.
Stories is the remaster that got announced at the Direct like a few weeks ago. So that'll be coming to PS4, Switch, and PC. And I believe Monster Hunter Stories 2 is just the PS4 edition.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be releasing both of those at the same day. That's just a bold idea, I guess.
Oh, so yeah.
Giving people a little bit of a breather there. At least on PlayStation, but there you go on that front. I believe they are doing physical releases, but I think it's, I want to say the in North America, it's just Switch version of the original game. And then in Europe, it's just the PS4 editions. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to get the physical editions, you're going to have to do some work there, depending on what platforms you want them on. And I believe they're doing like a collection physical release as well. Yeah, they mention it here. Physical release is just Switch in North America. It includes Monster Hunter Stories on the cart, and the second game is a download code. But digital, there'll be the original game, Stories 2, and then a collection bundle with both of them. I assume probably $60 for the both of them, but maybe not. We'll see. And yeah, Europe physical is just the PS4 edition for the collection, and digital is all that other stuff. And yeah, Japan physical is only for the Switch version. So yeah, a little weird, but yeah, we'll see. Those are some pretty neat games. Something you wouldn't expect out of the series. Mm-hmm. Then just up and make a Pokemon style game, Monster Hunter, Monster Collecting game. So that's neat. You can check that out for this summer.
Yeah.
And then next up here, Persona 3 Reload. They announced the expansion pass last week, and that's been kind of a source of some questions here about you know, what the cost was going to be, if you can get the DLC separate, the big story DLC, and we've got answers to all of that. It'll be $34.99 for the expansion pass. If you have Game Pass Ultimate, it'll be included on there. At no extra cost. The episode, I guess, is not going to be sold separately. So it'll cost you to get $35 just for that DLC, which is half the cost of the game itself. So you're going to essentially be locked in to pay at least a full price, $105, to get the full breadth of story content that they are going to. And yeah, we're still missing some of the stuff that was in Persona 3 Portable, mainly the female MC for that. But yeah, this episode, I guess, is adding the main bit from Fess, the answer expansion to that. So that's definitely a thing that's going to cause a lot of people some anger here. As you know, they sold a $100 premium edition that does not include that expansion pass up front, despite being basically what the cost of that would be. I'm sure they'll have a bundle at some point to get all of it together. So yeah, definitely kind of showing the Atlas spirit of not having any compromise to make getting stuff easily and at an affordable price. They want you to pay full price and as much money as you're willing to give them. So yeah, that's going to be the fun part of this. Luckily, if you've been playing it on Game Pass and you have Game Pass Ultimate, Mm-hmm. You won't have to pay extra for the waves that are coming. The first one's already out that just has, I think, background music stuff that's just fan service. Same with the second wave is some more background music and some costumes. And then you have to wait till September, I think, for the main part of the content here.
Mm-hmm.
And $35 for that's a lot. So, yeah, there you go. Atlas has revealed their grand scheme of getting more money out of you. So there you go. But speaking of getting more money out of you, there's some other games here putting out some post-launch content. There's Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown that came out in January. And along with getting it's on sale right now, I think for $30. So you can pay a pretty good price for that game. They have announced their post-launch roadmap. Particularly, there's going to be an update here probably within the next week or so called Warrior's Path. That's going to add a speedrun mode, a permadeath mode, and new outfits for Sargon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, later in the spring, they're going to add a boss attack mode. Boss rush mode, more outfits. Summer, they're going to add a new update called Divine Trials. That's also free. Adds new combat platforms and puzzle challenges, as well as new amulets, new Sargon outfits, and more content. Then later in 2024, they're going to offer new story DLC.
Yep.
So an expansion of sorts to that. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's a game people should definitely check out if they like their Metroids. Because that is another good one of those. And one that's not done super well for Ubisoft, because they probably launched it at a weird time ahead of a bunch of big games that people would probably rather put their money into, and as well as making a game that, you know, is on the in the style of a Metroid Dread, but maybe not having the pedigree that Nintendo has with those kind of games. That certainly makes it a riskier move for some people to invest into, but it is on sale right now for 40% off, so you may have an opportunity to get it for a little bit cheaper now.
Yeah.
As is tradition with Ubisoft stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Avatar game is also on sale if you want that. Any other games. You just wait long enough if you're not willing to get it right at launch, and you'll get a good discount. As we see, they're going to add more content, so it'll be even better. And then, yeah, the other game is getting some post-launch content is Sea of Stars.
Mm-hmm.
They've announced that they have reached 5 million players across all platforms. And along with that, they announced a new mode called Single Player Plus, which is not really single player. As far as I could see, it's kind of a three-player mode that you can play with three people for that. Yeah, up to three players will be able to play at any given time and engage in Sea of Stars signature movement and combat, which will have an added wrinkle in co-op. They have a number of advanced techniques that combine character abilities or simply make use of more than one character at a time. And in this mode, there'll be co-op timed hits that give other party members an active role in the aforementioned moves. So when you guys fail to get the big hit in, you can just get angry at the other people.
Yep.
So that's the fun part. The new mode is specifically referred to in Sabotage's press release as Couch Co-op. I mean, you're going to have to invite some friends over to play it rather than go online, though I know PlayStation has some remote play stuff, like share play stuff that lets you at least get a second person in. I don't know about any of these others. Steam might have an option that allows you to do something like that without having people directly in your vicinity, but
yeah.
But hey, that's cool. Another way to play that game. So they're also working on some more DLC for that game for, let's see, called Throes of the Watchmaker, which is a Kickstarter stretch goal the game met during its initial campaign. So that'd be cool. So there'd be some more story content here at some point. So there you go. More Sea of Stars to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, yeah, let's get to some more stories here. Let's see. Payday 3.
Yeah, Payday 3 was a friggin' was a bust.
Yeah, it was such a failure that the CEO Tobias Jorgen has been removed, and they are looking for new leadership, which is a hell of a thing to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first time I've seen a gaming CEO be held accountable for their failures in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's one for a developer, not a publisher or a platform holder. So that's a whole thing here. But yeah, it seems mm-hmm. like as part of their financial year-end stuff, they have announced that they failed to meet sales expectations. So the CEO of developer Starbreeze has been removed as the company looks for new leadership to kind of get them back on track.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the game had mostly broken servers, bad matchmaking. People had a very bad time kind of being annoyed that they made a new Payday, you know, after all this time, making so many expansions for Payday 2. And that, you know, this new one comes out, seems like it's going to be good, and then just kind of is a technical mess. The company's board of directors announced that effective immediately, Sjorgen has been removed from his position as CEO and was no longer part of the company, said board member and former Focus Home Interactive CEO Jürgen Goldner is now the interim CEO while they look for a new person to take on the role permanently. And according to that note, Starbreeze's board decided that the company needs different leadership. Finally, a CEO has been held accountable. Unfortunately, it's not for any of the ones you are thinking about, any of the companies you're thinking about. So there you go. Let's see. Yeah. And then last one, some good news. Finally, some good news in the realm of companies in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
We talked last week that the deal seemed to be finalized for Saber Interactive leaving Embracer Group, essentially being acquired by a private investor group that would allow them to become independent of Embracer and kind of get back in better financial standing. And that seems like we have finalized that. They've been sold to a company called Beacon Interactive for $247 million. The deal overall is $500 million because there's an option for them to also purchase 4A Games, makers of the Metro series, as well as Zen Studios, makers of Pinball FX and some other stuff as well, to make that an even $500 million. And it seems like they decided to take that option. So the companies that they own now, Saber Interactive and Beacon Interactive, is Madhead, Digic, Nimble Giant, Fractured Byte, Spligate, 3D Realms, New World Interactive, SPL, Stuntworks, Bitex, 4A, and Zen, totaling over 3,000 developers around the world, saying that we have decided precisely on these studios for acquisition because we believe they represent the best of what Saber is and can be.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the caveat of 4A Games going with Saber Interactive is that Embracer still owns the license and publishing rights for the Metro series, so if they're going to continue working on those games, they will have to make a deal with Embracer.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the other studios that were under Saber that are sticking with Embracer are 34 Big Things, Aspyr, Beamdog, Demiurge, Shiver, Snapshot Games, Tripwire, and Tuxedo Labs. So that's unfortunate for those studios, but hopefully they are able to flourish in the way that not many other studios have been under Embracer. Some good news. A bunch of studios that you can feel a bit better about supporting now that they are out of the cold embrace of Embracer Group. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank goodness. I'm glad they're getting out of that. Just Embracer Group has done just an incredible amount of damage to this industry. And just they need to. It's really difficult because Embracer Group is a group that has like so ownership in just so many companies, and if they go down, all those other companies probably go down with them.
Yeah.
So it's a lose-lose situation. Any of these companies that can do what they can to get out of it while they can, honestly, you know, that's really the only good option they've got.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's good for them. They don't go the way of Volition Games and get shut down completely, or, you know, Eidos Montreal or Black Forest Games that have had to have massive layoffs, like many other at Embracer Group. Let's see what else here. The Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake is still being worked on, but I believe that's being moved over to Aspyr instead of Saber Interactive making it. I could be wrong on that, but I believe that's the latest update on that game that still somehow exists. I don't know if there's much active development going on, but there you go. Some good news for the industry. Not been a ton of that lately. So yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Managed to make it through a week without any layoff news.
Somehow. Don't jinx it, though, because we almost certainly will have some next week.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go for this week. That'll do it for the show. This is a big release week, I believe. We've got, let me see, the Princess Peach game. Showtime is out this week. Dragon's Dogma 2 is out this week. Rise of the Ronin, also out this week. Those are all on the same day, March 22nd. The Alone in the Dark remake is out on the 20th. I believe, what is it, Hi-Fi Rush is out this week on PS5. So you can check that out. I believe there's a discount for pre-ordering it for PS Plus people. So you can get that a little bit cheaper. A handful of things here coming out this week. Some bigger stuff, so definitely some more things worth checking out. MLB The Show will also be out this week in full for everybody. So you can check that out as well. So yeah, some good stuff to keep an eye on. And yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Brandon, for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and new games to talk about. And if you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out. And select strangers that are also happy there's no major layoff news at the moment. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.